For the next half hour of the show, we're going to be talking with Carolyn Abels. She is the editor of the relatively new local magazine, Vermont's Local Banquet, all about food. Carolyn, welcome to WGDR. Let me try that again. Welcome to WGDR.
Hi, good morning, Carl.
There, now we can hear you just fine. You have come to Montpelier to edit this wonderful new magazine.
That's right. Well, Vermont's Local Banquet is about a year old. We're a quarterly magazine, or we like to say seasonal, since most of our stories are tied to whatever season the issue comes out in.
So we can read seasonally.
Yes, read seasonally and eat locally.
Very good.
And we're a free magazine as well, distributed at various sites around Vermont, co-ops and health food stores, libraries, etc., markets. And really what our goal is to illuminate the connections between food and farms and communities. And I really want to stress the word communities. People are beginning to realize once again where food comes from and the connections between food and farms. But when you throw communities in there, it really completes the picture of what's going on in Vermont. Folks around the state are taking a really hard look at the ability of their communities to feed themselves should anything happen in the world economy and with peak oil that would limit their access to food from across the country and around the world. People are really concerned about that, taking a look at that, joining together to create really interesting initiatives that guarantee a local food supply for years to come. So when you pick up Local Banquet, you really will read not just stories about a certain food product, how good it tastes, or you won't just find recipes or stories about restaurants or chefs. You really will find more pieces about the actual people who are pushing the local food movement forward in Vermont, the farmers, the food processors, the local activists, et cetera. So we really are a magazine about people, not just about food.
Hmm. And in Vermont, we have potentially a large market for that sort of thing. It's something that gets a lot of interest. On the other hand, lots of other publishers have realized that there's a large market for that sort of thing. So you see 7 Days with its weekly food columns and articles in the second section in particular. And a lot of them are about chefs and restaurants, but some of them about people and behind the production. And you see just ordinary daily papers like the Times Argus taking up such issues. Do you ever feel crowded in the market?
Not really. We actually feel quite unique in the market. I also want to throw a shout out to Edible Green Mountains, which is also a quarterly magazine, a free quarterly magazine, and they do a terrific, terrific job covering some of the same issues. But really, when you take our magazine and put it side by side with other publications, like I said, you really will find much more of an emphasis on ordinary people and what they're doing. We also have a do-it-yourself feature in every issue that really encourages people to go out and try things like foraging for unusual crops in the forest or giving them gardening tips. We had one do-it-yourself story on how to build a solar food dryer. I haven't tried it yet myself, but so really these kind of stories encourage the reader to sort of take things a step beyond just being a consumer. We can definitely vote with our dollars, but the publishers and I really believe that for the local food system to work, people can't just look at it as a transaction, but as something that they are personally involved in and potentially politically involved in. And I think that will make that really will guarantee that the local food movement is not just a trend, but is a movement, a lasting movement. We don't see local food as trendy. We see it as absolutely essential. Another thing I should say about the other magazines is we really are trying to keep our advertising rates very affordable for small businesses and farmers. So when you look at our advertising rates compared maybe to 7 days or edible, our strategy is to make sure that we are funded by many of the small businesses that we write about and are encouraging people to visit. So you'll see a lot of tiny ads rather than big large ads. And if anyone out there is listening and is interested in advertising, you know, you could have an ad in our magazine for as little as $120. So taken all together, you know, people have definitely told us that they see us as a really unique publication, and we are completely local as well. We're published locally, and me and the publishers live in the state, and we haven't accepted any advertising from any outside, any organizations outside the state up to this point.
So what about NOFA's summer gathering down in Massachusetts?
What about it?
Yeah, and would you accept advertisements for that?
Oh, sure, absolutely. Yeah, okay. Yeah. But our focus is not on getting large corporations from across the country to advertise with us.
Monsanto need not apply.
Exactly.
Okay. Well, before we go any further, we're talking with Carolyn Abel. She's the editor of Vermont's Local Banquet. And if you want to join the conversation, you can give us a call here at 454-7762. And Carolyn, how can people get a hold of this magazine?
Well, right now, you can find us at most of the co-ops around the state. We are working on distributing to more places around the state. We're a startup magazine, and as you can imagine, distribution is challenging in Vermont, much like small farmers have a challenge distributing some of their goods. We are trying to find the best way to distribute and one that sort of limits our carbon footprint as well. So you can't find us in that many places at the moment, but what you can do is go on our website, which is localbanquet.com, and find a list of some places that you might be able to find the magazine. We also have all of our issues, back issues, online, so feel free to read all of our stories online as well.
Which issue can I find the plans for the solar food dryer in?
Oh, let's see. I don't remember which issue that was in.
Okay, I can poke around.
Okay.
I've got some drawings that I've gotten from online somewhere and would like to look at others and get an idea of you know, what design issues people have used before I build my own. But I think a solar food dryer would be a real good addition to the homestead.
I think it would, absolutely. I also should add that we really are interested in publishing original writing by farmers. We really want to get the voices of farmers out there, and we, you know, we feel that farmers can often be misunderstood or romanticized. Their lives can be romanticized, and so if there are any farmers out there who like to write, who enjoy writing, do contact us. We had a great piece run in, I believe, the spring issue by a sheep producer named Bill Fosher, who lives, actually he's not a Vermonter, but lives right across the river in Westmoreland, New Hampshire, and is involved in the Brattleboro local food scene. And it was a personal essay about how difficult it is for him to find adequate slaughtering facilities in the state. He has to drive about 3 or 4 hours, haul all of his lambs 3 or 4 hours in a trailer over Hogback Mountain to get his lamb slaughtered in the Capital District of New York. And he is working with some other meat producers in Brattleboro to start a local slaughterhouse, either farmer-owned or farmer-backed slaughterhouse in that area. So that piece is really an example of what we're all about. We are, you know, we want farmer voices to be out there. We want to make sure readers who are interested in local food can see a little bit deeper into the challenges and the opportunities, you know, that are facing some farmers and food producers out here in Vermont.
Yeah, it's one thing to read articles about the lack of slaughterhouses and statistics on how few slaughterhouses there are now compared to 10 or 20 years ago. It's another thing to read someone's personal story about how that affects his life and how he has to take his animals out of state to be slaughtered.
Exactly. We also are just finished, actually, in the next issue, we'll have the last installment of a series by a woman named Caitlin O'Brien, who's a who was an apprentice on a local vegetable farm here in the Montpelier area. And it was sort of a series of stories about what it's been like for her to be an apprentice on a farm, and whether, you know, she's still not sure whether she wants to start a farm, and some of her going back and forth with her husband about that issue. Should they start a farm? Should they not? So, you know, we're very sensitive and to the fact that there are lots and lots of different types of people involved in the local food conversation. And particularly, we really want people to pick up the magazine and sort of get a sense that local food is not simply about, should not exclude low-income folks. Local food is not something for the middle and upper-income crowd. It is being enjoyed by and sought out by people of lower incomes. We had a story run in one of our earlier issues asking, is local food a frugal choice? We had somebody write, is it really more expensive? And she concluded that it can be, but it also cannot be, based on whether you join a CSA or not, or whether you buy in bulk or not. And so that was sort of an example of, you know, we want readers to sort of not make stereotypes about who buys local food. We also had a story recently about the Smoky House Center near Rutland. It's a farm where at-risk teenagers from Rutland come and work the farm after school every day, and the amazing effects that working on a farm can have on troubled teens and lower-income teens. So, we really want to take the conversation deeper, is, I guess, the best way to say it.
We're talking with Carolyn Abels, the editor of Vermont's Local Banquet. Give us a call at 454-7762. If you've seen the magazine, have some comments on it, or maybe have some story ideas for future issues.
That would be great.
Tell us about Rutland Spudman.
Oh, Rutland Spudman.
Donald Haliba.
Yes, one of my favorite farmers. Well, I wrote about him in the current issue, the fall issue. Don Haliba is really an example of the type of person we want to write about. He is a 70-year-old potato farmer in Rutland who he grew up on a farm, and all his life he wanted to be a farmer, but his father discouraged him from farming. His father had a really tough time on his own farm and said, no, you know, go do something else. So Don went into welding and other mechanical work for most of his life, and at 65 retired and realized he wanted to plant some potatoes, and he did. He moved back onto his father's old land, and he started growing these amazing potatoes, and people at the Rutland Farmers Market began to say, these are fantastic. These are the best potatoes we've ever had. He was contacted by the Vermont Fresh Network and was hooked up with some chefs in Dorset, I believe at the Dorset Inn, and he was selling his potatoes to some very high-end restaurants. And now he's sort of a local celebrity at age 70, having only gotten into farming at age 65. He's really riding, I would say, the local food wave, and it's just a really heartwarming story. He's a real tough old Vermonter with a thick accent and very shy, but he did it, and the farming has changed his life. He told me he regrets having never gotten into it when he was younger.
That's really important what you say about him being a local celebrity. I was just reading the other day something on energybulletin.net, a peak oil news aggregator and sustainability news aggregator that I go to almost every day. And it was written by Gene Logsdon. I think it was excerpted from one of his books. He's the Amish farmer and writer out in Ohio, I believe,
mm-hmm.
author of The Contrary Farmer. And he was writing about the wound within or something like that, about how for decades or, you know, 50 years or more, farmers have been insulted, and kids growing up on a farm and in schools that were mixed with town kids and farm kids felt bad about their country heritage and tried to be more like their city counterparts or mm-hmm. urban counterparts, and really lost a lot of touch with the land by doing so, and lost a lot of themselves. But here's a person who's started farming late in life and become advanced admired and become a celebrity because of it. I think that's a really much healthier atmosphere for us to be in at this point in our history, since we need a lot more farmers now.
Absolutely. And Don is really touched by the fact that a lot of young people are moving to Vermont, not to change Vermont, but to really learn from its history and sort of make farming a community endeavor again. He remembers from his very, very young years what that was like, how people would come and help his family husk corn and all of that stuff. And, he's very touched by the interest that young people have in him. And really, I know Vermonters are sometimes concerned about the influx of people coming in from out of state, but there is a layer of people, young idealistic farming types who really are taking farming seriously and want to learn from their elders and seek out their elders. And I think that's really a beautiful story. We're never going to return to exactly how things were in the 19th century, but we can take some of the elements of how farms were the centerpieces of communities, and we can sort of modernize and update some of those community endeavors, like the husking bee, for instance, and use that as a way to maybe cure some of the ails of modern life where we're disconnected from each other. Well, let's all join together, let's say, on a farm for an evening of work, but not call it work necessarily.
Do you think everyone these days understands what a husking bee is?
I'm not sure.
Better explain it.
I don't really know the details about how they worked, but it's when it was time to husk the corn, folks would get together, neighbors would come and help out their local farmers.
Like a quilting bee, but with corn.
I guess so. So in local banquet, you will find that sort of history is a running thread through many of the stories.
Mm-hmm.
We did a piece on the Plymouth Cheese Factory.
Well, just a minute. We got Donald Haliba we're talking about, and I want to know what the secret of his wonderful potatoes is. I didn't find that in the article.
You know, he's such a humble guy that he just sort of shrugged when I asked him that and said, I don't know, it's just because I care.
Uh-huh.
And I think there's something to be said for that.
Hmm. 35 varieties of potatoes he grows.
That's right.
That's pretty amazing. Okay, I'll let you go on with your story.
No, I just wanted to mention the Plymouth Cheese Factory in Plymouth Notch has sort of been around since, I believe, the late 1700s. And it was a cooperative community venture initially and was producing cheese for two centuries, and was recently taken over and updated and modernized. And the recipe for Plymouth cheese is Plymouth cheese is still being made there. And the difference, though, is that it might soon be made with buffalo milk, water buffalo milk from a local water buffalo dairy.
Hmm.
So that's an example of folks taking an old community-based business, updating it, and making it popular again and making it work within the current local food system. There's water buffalo milk available. Great, we'll use it. We'll see how the original recipe can maintain its integrity using a different kind of milk.
How close did the bison buffalo, how close did they come to Vermont in their original range? Do you know?
Oh, that's a question out of my league.
Okay. I was at an event a couple weeks ago where someone said that the reason Buffalo, New York was called Buffalo, New York is there were buffalo there.
It could be.
Planes came all the way into New York State, maybe even into western Vermont. I don't remember.
Okay. I don't know if they were ever milked, though.
I don't know either. And certainly water buffalo before very modern times were not found around here.
Right.
And then in the latest issue of Local Banquet, you have Vermont's Local Banquet, you've got an article about seed saving.
That's right. There's a really interesting woman in Heartland, I believe, who is a seed saver. Now, one of the challenges of publishing a local food magazine is that you really want to reach people who have really never heard of any of these issues around local food, but you also want to make it interesting to local food activists as well.
Hmm.
So a lot of the activists who pick up the magazine will already know about seed saving, about how many of our heritage varieties are threatened by the planting of monocultures throughout the world. And this woman, Sylvia Davitz, is planting every season very unusual crops, keeping them going, and then sharing her seeds with folks who contact her and might want to grow them in their area of the country. I believe she tried to grow peanuts in her greenhouse or in her garden. She's experimenting, and I think that a lot of folks in Vermont are seeing, you know, okay, sure, let's try to plant wheat again and beans, you know, that were very extensively planted throughout the 19th century. But let's also bring in some more unusual crops and see if they work here. There's a woman in Putney who's trying to grow rice, and her husband is actually Japanese, so I figure that gets them off to a good start.
Hmm.
You know, peanuts.
Well, we talk about the need for 50 million or 100 million new farmers in the United States if we're going to feed ourselves at our present population with declining oil availability. 50
right.
million farmers is the title of an essay by Richard Heinberg. And you know, in order for a lot of people, new people, to become farmers, then they need to have models, and it needs to just be kind of a norm that people talk about, okay, I'm going to become a farmer. So
okay.
I think the sort of articles that you have in Vermont's Local Banquet are just part of making farming seem normal. You pick up a magazine and you read about what your local farmers are doing. So I want to thank you for that work.
You're welcome. It does have to become a cultural norm, and we also have to make sure that farmers get decent wages while making local food affordable for all the rest of us. We have to make sure that farmers get adequate health insurance, and we have to make sure that they do not suffer burnout, and that brings us back to community. You're not going to have 50 million farmers working by themselves on their own. They're going to quit after a few years if that's the case. So
right.
The more that communities can support farmers, the better we can treat them, look after their health. I think the better we all are for the future.
Well, Carolyn Abels, the editor of Vermont's Local Banquet, thanks so much for joining us on Relocalizing Vermont.
Oh, you're welcome.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
And you can find Vermont's Local Banquet at the co-op, co-ops around Vermont, and also at their website, www.localbanquet.org.